33 has to do with natural representations. And this is not the only one, it's just the start of them. We will be talking this time quite a bit about stones and natural representations, talking about stones quite a bit. But there is some missiological stuff too, application, you know, coming as always at the end. Not as always at the end, but here in this case, we'll be talking about it in the very end of the lecture. This is Unit 3, of course. We're talking about forces. And so through thinking about, you know, the various representations, why Muslims think that these particular objects are so powerful. One of them we have talked about a lot, and that is the Black Stone, right there in the corner of the Kaaba. And when Muslims go there on the pilgrimage, I mean, goodness sakes, if we mentioned it once, we've mentioned it a half a dozen times, that they really want to go on the pilgrimage to, well, this is certainly one strong motivation, let's put it that way. And not the only one, but one strong motivation to touch the Black Stone, to kiss it, to embrace it. And so in that, right in front of that Black Stone, you can see pictures of people pushing and shoving, and some of them are just raising their hand. They don't dare to get close to it. Of course, it's the danger there of getting trampled. So if you're a little short like Zacchaeus was, or old and feeble, you would certainly want to be hanging on to somebody who is big and strong, because people do get trampled together to death in that place, because they all want to touch the Black Stone. So you've got millions of people circling around to touch that and kiss it as they go around. I mean, whatever you can do. I mean, get the blessing. Now, another blessing, another stone we're talking about is the Dome of the Rock, and that is in Jerusalem. We really have a hard time, don't we, figuring out why that is such a special place to Muslims. I mean, they are not about to give it up, but of course the Jews aren't either. And so when you think of Israel-Palestine tension, the real problem there is in East Jerusalem, the Dome of the Rock. And it's a very sacred place. And I mean, I can't help but think that there is some of this spiritual, mystical, magical stuff going on in the Dome of the Rock that has to do, in other words, that strong pull why Muslims are not are willing to give up Jerusalem. Now, I'm not arguing, I'm not saying that the Jews are the only ones who have a place in Israel. I'm not arguing for that. I believe in a sort of a two-state solution. I wouldn't say, like one Republican candidate did here several months ago, that the Palestinians are an invented people, which I think is a big mistake. They are not an invented people. But I'm just saying that the Dome of the Rock is extremely precious to Muslims, and I can't help but believe that some of the very reasons we're talking about is here. One of the things is that Muslims have the idea that Muhammad's beast he was riding as he touched down in Jerusalem, right there in the Dome of the Rock, he put his foot down, and that there is an imprint there before he took off and went on the second half of the journey. Now, I don't know, I've never seen it myself, but the stone, you see, the Dome of the Rock. And now, on a small, less, of course, well-known or publicized place is Morre Rabat. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Not a big place, and in fact, I couldn't even find it on the map. But in northwest, as I understand, Afghanistan, there, allegedly is the handprint of Fatima. Who is Fatima? Well, she's the daughter of Muhammad, the wife of Ali. And there, the hoofprints of Ali's horse, Duldul. Now, I doubt very much that Ali's horse ever went to Afghanistan. After all, he died in Iraq. This is the thing that legends are made of, and that's in Morghi Rabat. Now, it's not the only place. In Herat, which is also in Afghanistan, if you look at the map, it's right over to the east. I'm sorry, yes. When I say east, I mean that it is, it's really western Afghanistan. If you look on the map, it's right next to Iran. That's a mistake there. There is also a special place there. But in the north, very much north of Afghanistan, is Balkh. And there's a tradition there that a stone was thrown from the mountain, and so women pray that their sons would become strong, and they would be, so men go there and try to lift it. Now, there are these various special places in Afghanistan, sometimes hard to find, but nevertheless, there they are. They're small, but nevertheless, in Afghanistan, you'd think that that was such a strong place. You know, the Taliban have been there and been in power. But nevertheless, in these settings, there are strong, I guess, traditions and strong folk practices. Now, this is a little bit of a missiological stuff here. Now, we could talk, too, of other places, but some missiological stuff here is when you work with Muslims, knowing the folk concepts, you know, we have to keep in mind that Muslims they think our Bible is a holy book, and so sometimes illiterate people will buy it, thinking that, you know, if they put it on their shelf, good luck, up high, it'll bring them good luck. They have no intention to read it, in fact, probably can't read it, so we have to be aware of that. I'm not saying we shouldn't get rid of Bibles and sell Bibles and get rid of the scripture, just be aware of the fact that Muslims have these views. Now, another question for us is it right, should we say mashallah every time a new baby is born? Mashallah, mashallah. Let's remember that Muslims do this to prevent any evil, harm, danger that would come to the baby. So mashallah is the little formula that would prevent any harm coming from envy or evil spirits. So, you know, you might think of saying something else that is not that particular thing, but giving praise to God and then explaining what you mean by it. You're not preventing any magic, but you are, you know, declaring that God, in fact, has given this little one, and you trust him. Another thing is, too, when you study the Bible with Muslim converts, I know that I've studied the Bible with Muslims, the former Muslims, and they were very, sometimes it seemed to me that really what the only emphasis is to memorize it, but not to think about it. Of course, this is the, oftentimes this is what they do in the schools too, so you really want to work with on Muslims is to not only memorize the word, but to think deeply and apply it personally to Muslims. I can remember one fellow who came with us, and for 2 years he just seemed like he gave nothing but rote answers to every question, irrelevant answers, but we kept drilling and trying to get him to think and think and think. And finally, after 2 years, then he sort of took off and started to think through, apply the scriptures, and certainly it was a discipling, you know, it was just a great moment when that came. So this is what we have to think of, given the background of Muslims. But there are other stones, too, other stones around the Muslim world. One is the white stone in Iran. It bears Imam Rida's handprint. Who was he? He was a great spiritual leader in the history of Iran. And it says it's apparently his hand is embedded in the wall. Now, you didn't ever see this. And so I got on here, remember the DVD, Mysticus Iran, which we show in class. But it's an amazing video. And apparently, in another situation here, there's a white stone because the imam put milk on it. Mothers without enough milk for their baby would go there and would hope that they would then be able to have enough, produce enough milk for their baby. Nishapur is where Ali tied his horse, and there's a lot of devotion to that spot. There are other stones too, like the agate. In Yemen, it's red and bright and powerful. Cut his beads along bars, and it brings merit. It rids travelers of annoying beggars. You see, if you have that, then the beggars won't pester you, which they often do. Protects from accidents, shuts up false witnesses, keeps from you from wanting anything or anything in need. If it's heated and rubbed in the eyeball, it cures eye disease. So interesting, is it not? Turquoise, a magical power in that stone that makes the wearer happy. And when you wear that, you're never in want. It rests the eyes. Ali apparently wore that to win battles. Unfortunately, he didn't win them all. If you know history, Ali lost some battles, and so did his son, Hussein, grievously, for which the Shiites have been mourning for 1,500 years. So those are, that's the turquoise. Another one is the stone is the serpentine. It cures poisonous stings. Well, I suppose the sting of a scorpion or something like that. And would protect from dangerous beasts. And jade cures traveler's thirst. Wear it under the clothes to protect from the evil eye. So you don't see these things often, do you? But they're there. Now, or protect, from the baby's colic. You know, kids, little ones are always getting colic and they cry and cry because of the tummy ache. So then the jade would help. Black stones. There's a great awe for the power of the black stone. And evildoers are turned into a black stone. Now, example here, the tune of Bibi Sharabanu, who's the wife of the 12th Imam near Tehran. And the rule here is that only women can enter. If a man enters, he's in trouble, and allegedly one did and became stone. Now, let's think just a little bit of missiology here before we wind this up. Isn't it interesting that Jesus talked about stones? And he did it more than once. Don't have to turn to all of them, but they're all the same. Matthew 21:42, Mark 12:10, and Luke 20:17. It says that he is the head of the cornerstone, Mark 24. And, he says you've rejected the one that you've rejected has become the head of the cornerstone. So I think it's a powerful thing to preach on, you know, something like that, because stones will connect. Not that we're giving power this, but we need to find things that connect with our audience in the Muslim world. Shells, the Bedouin use jewelry to protect against the evil eye. Water is also used for magical purposes. And remember that when Muslims do their ablutions, this is part of it. In other words, cleansing from spells. Now, bread, boys, according to the tradition, that they were playing football with bread and they turned into monkeys. Now, metal is an iron box with tiny Quran, is the Quran pieces, and other with tiny Quran is the most powerful. Remember, we talked before about iron and certain of the evil spirits. Iron cures weak eyes, it cures deafness, hemorrhoids, and the steel is beneficial. Silver, gold, lead, and so on. So, interesting stuff, is it not?